Hi, this is Chris Pels. In this video, we're going to learn how to create a custom ASP.NET membership provider. To implement a custom membership provider, what we need to do is create a class that inherits from a base membership provider class and then implements a number of abstract properties and methods that are required by that base class. So let's go ahead and create a class library project here. And we'll call this membership provider VB. And we'll put this class in a folder here. Now we're going to need a couple of references for this in order to implement the provider. Let me just show all files and we'll add a couple of references. We need to add two actually, and the first one is system.configuration, and the second one will be system.web. Now we have those references, the next thing we need to do is take our class 1 here and inherit from the base class I mentioned that has the abstract properties and methods. And that is in system.web.security.membershipprovider. And once you hit the enter key here, we'll see the stubs for all the methods that we need to implement. Now, as you can see from the list of methods here in the drop down, there's quite a few methods and some properties that we need to implement. So, in the interest of time, what I'm going to do is bring in a class that I've already implemented all these properties and methods, so we don't have to spend a ton of time looking at the development of the code, but can focus more on what these methods do and how they're implemented. So let's go out here and we'll take the project and let's refresh it. And here's the class that I want to bring in called HDI Membership Provider. So we'll include that in the project. And we'll also delete class 1 here because we're not going to need that anymore. Before we take a look at the implementation of the methods for the membership provider base class, we need to create a place to store our membership data. Now, if we were using the SQL membership provider that comes with ASP.NET, there's a script that creates a variety of tables and stored procedures for the membership data. However, since we're creating a custom provider here, what we want to do is have our own place to store membership data. So let's go over to SQL Server and take a look at how we're going to do that. There's a table here called Users, which will be used to store our membership data. And there's a variety of columns that are contained in it. Most of these columns coincide with the need to store certain pieces of information to implement the functionality required by the methods in our base class. And we'll refer back to these columns as we go through the code and look at the implementation of some of that functionality. Now, we happen to be using SQL Server in this sample, but you could easily use another database, say Microsoft Access, Oracle, etc., to store your data. So now let's go back over to Visual Studio and take a look at the implementation of our membership provider class. So let's take a look at the implementation of our custom membership provider. As you can see, the HDI membership provider inherits from the base membership provider class, which is required for any custom membership provider. Now, what I've done here is to group various sections of the class into regions, so it makes it a little easier for us to take a look at things, given that there's just over 1,200 lines of code in the class. There's a number of import statements up top just to make it easier so we don't have to type fully qualified namespaces. There's a number of class-wide variables here that are used at various points of the functionality in the methods of the class. Then we have our first override here of the application name property from the abstract base class, and all this is doing is storing and retrieving the name of the application in one of those class-wide variables that we just saw up above. Then we have several other properties here that are also implementing overrides of the abstract base class. We have one for the enabling of resetting a password, one for whether or not the password can be retrieved, whether or not the provider requires that a question and answer be part of the registration or create user process, whether or not there's a unique email required in the membership process, the maximum number of invalid password attempts that the user can make when logging in, as well as the window of time in minutes in this case that we count invalid password attempts. Also, there's one for what format we use for the password, and we'll see that in a little more detail in a minute. Whether or not we require a minimum number of non-alphanumeric characters, and also what the minimum required length of the password is. And then lastly, what the strength regular expression is. Now, those of you who have worked with the SQL membership provider that comes with ASP.NET, a number of these properties should be familiar to you, as they are attributes that can be set in the web.config file when you specify the membership provider. And when we put this custom membership provider into a website to test it, you'll see that some of these will be set as attributes of our membership provider in the web.config file. So let's close up the properties here. Then the first method from the base class that we're implementing is the initialize method. And essentially what happens here in the initialize method is that we're retrieving a number of values from the web.config file. So for example, let's take line 172 here, and what's happening here is that we're going out to the web.config file, we're getting the max invalid password attempts attribute, and we're storing that in the class-wide variable of the same name. What I've done here in this class is to try to be consistent in the naming convention, so that you'll see many of the class-wide variables are named such that they correspond to the values in the web.config file, as well as the properties that use those class-wide variables. And the last thing we do here with the config information is we bring in the password format, and then based upon what value that is in the web.config file attribute, we set the class-wide variable password format to the corresponding standard enum value for membership password format. Next, we go down here and get the connection string from the config file. And then lastly, what we're doing is bringing in the machine key section of the web.config file, which, as you can see by the comment here on line 107, has to do with encrypting and decrypting our key information. Now, there's quite a few methods from the base class that are implemented here. So what I want to do is just pick a couple of these methods. We'll look at how they're implemented and what the approach is, and then you can look at the other methods in your leisure by downloading the sample source code, because there's a lot of consistency across the methods in terms of the approach. So let's take a look first at the createUser method, because it's a very important method in our membership provider. So what the createUser method does is it receives inbound a number of pieces of information from the base class, and then once the user is created, there's a membership user object that's returned, and this is the standard membership user object that would be returned by any other provider, including the default SQL membership provider. So all we're doing is just interceding in the process and getting the information for the membership user and populating that object on our own. So the first thing that happens here in the createUser method is we set up that the user will be validated once we've created them by creating an instance of the arguments for validating the password and then calling the onValidatingPassword method. Then if we get a cancel return from these arguments in the call to the validating of the password, we set the status to invalid password, and we actually don't create the user and just return from the method. Next, we take the email address and we determine whether or not the current settings require a unique email, and if so, then we go out to the database and see if a user already exists for the email. Then if they do exist, we set the status to a duplicate email and we return from creating the user. Next, down here on 361, we take the username, go off to the getUser method, and see whether or not we get a membership user object back, or whether we get a membership user object that's populated with data. Because if we do not get a membership user back, that means the user doesn't exist in the database, and then we can go forward with creating the user. So to create a user, we have to set up a number of parameters that are passed into a stored procedure. In this case, it's called user underscore INS. And most of these values come inbound to the create user method. You'll recognize many of the names. And then once we've set up the parameters, we execute the stored procedure, determine whether or not it was successful. And if it is, we set our status to success, otherwise it's set to rejected. And then once we know that our user has been successfully created, down here on 397, we call the getUser method, passing the username, and it returns a membership user object instance, which is then returned from the createUser method. Next, let's take a look at the validateUser method. And this method is called every time you try to log into the system with your username and password. So let's see how that one works. So the username and password come inbound to the method, and when we're done, we return true or false whether or not we validated our user. So the first thing that we do here in the method is to take the username and execute a stored procedure that goes off and gets us the password that's currently on file for the user. And this particular stored procedure is called user underscore validate. We go off, we execute that, open up a SQL data reader, and we get some of the values, as I said, from that reader, or the row corresponding to the user in the table in the database. One is the password that's currently on file, and the second is whether or not the user is approved. Now, once we have that information, we call a checkPassword method, which is a utility method here in the class that takes the inbound password to the validateUser method and compares it with the password that's stored in the database. And I want to take a look at this because the checkPassword method contains the logic that allows us to compare our inbound password, which is in plain text format, to the stored password, which may or may not be hashed. So let's go down to the definition of the checkPassword method and see how this works. Entered and stored password come inbound here, and then based upon what the format of the password is, in this case we are dealing with encrypted or hashed password. Let's say we have a hashed password. What happens is we then call this encode password method, takes the plain text password that the user typed in and encodes it, and then we compare whether or not it's equal to the one that comes from the database. And that encode password method is right down here. And one important thing to note is that it is using the machine key section from the web.config file, and similarly there's an unencode method down here if our password was encrypted. So let's go back up to our validate user method. So if after checking our password the two passwords are equivalent, then we look to see whether or not the user is approved. If they are approved, we consider this a valid user. And then we make a call to a stored procedure which updates the login date for the user so that we're able to keep track of the date and time that each user logged into the system. Now, if our password checked failed, what would happen is we would call a separate utility method which updates the database to indicate that our user tried to log in, but it failed. And then finally down here on line 30, we return the local variable underscore is valid, which indicates whether or not the user was successfully validated. The third method that I'd like to have us look at here is the reset password method. What this does is it takes in the username and the answer to their security question and ultimately returns the new password. So the first thing we have to do, starting on 766, is find out whether or not the user has enabled or the application allows users to reset their password. If not, we throw an exception, otherwise we move on. Then we look and see if the user didn't supply an answer to the security question, and we are required based upon our configuration to have an answer to a security question. We update the failure count for the user and throw an exception. However, if that all looks good, then we create a new password using the generate password method in the .NET Framework membership namespace, or class rather. And we use the length of the password comes from the configuration file, as well as the minimum number of required non-alphanumeric characters. Now, once we have that new password, we take the username and the new password and call the onvalidating password. Then we test to see whether or not that was successful. If it is successful, then we call a stored procedure user underscore get password answer. The purpose of this stored procedure is to take the username and the application and retrieve for us the answer on file to the user's security question as whether or not they are currently locked out because they've exceeded the maximum number of password attempts. So following the call to that stored procedure, first thing we do is get the value from the results set that indicates whether or not the current user is locked out. If they are, we throw an exception. And if they are not locked out, then we take the answer from the results set and store it in a local variable. Next, if we are required by the configuration settings to have an answer to a security question, we then call a utility check password method, but this time we're passing actually the answer provided by the user to the answer from the database, and this same method that checks the password actually compares the two answers and tells us whether or not they are equivalent. If they aren't equivalent, then we update the failure count for the current user and throw an exception. If they are equivalent, then we call another stored procedure down here which updates the password for the user, and inbound it takes the new password here. Let me just scroll over to the right so you can see that, and it encodes or encrypts the password and passes that in as a parameter to the stored procedure, and it's stored in the user's record in the database. And finally, once that's all done, we take the new password and return it from the reset password method. Now there are a host of other methods here that you can see, and most of these methods follow a very similar approach. They either get values from the database, update values in the database, compare some values that are either passed into the methods to configuration values, etc., to determine whether or not the purpose of the method is being carried out. What I'd like to do here before we leave our custom membership provider and actually create a sample website and implement it is just go back over to SQL Server, and we'll take a quick look at the various stored procedures that are used here, just so you get a perspective on what those stored procedures are. And as with the additional methods in the actual implementation of the provider, you can take a look at these stored procedures in the sample code. So now let's go back over to Visual Studio and test out our custom membership provider in a sample website. So let's create a sample website where we can test out our custom membership provider. First, let's build the provider to make sure that we've done everything correctly, and it looks good. So now we'll create a sample website. just create a regular ASP.NET website, and let's call this website VB. So the first thing we want to do here in our website is add a reference to the custom membership provider that we created over here in the class library. Now what we're going to do is add that reference directly to the project in our solution. You could also create a bin folder on your own and copy and paste the assembly into the bin folder. So now that we've included the reference for our custom provider, we want to add some membership configuration information to the web.config file. So we're down here, and what we want to add is a membership element. And we'll set the default provider to be, let's call it HDI membership provider. Then we want to add the element for the providers. We'll clear any existing providers. And now we're going to add our new provider. So let's give it a name equal to HDI membership provider. And next we'll enter the type attribute. This is the fully qualified class name, so in this case it'll be HDI.ASP.NET.Membership.HDI membership provider. We'll set the connection string for our provider, and that is equal to HDI connection string, and that's defined up above in the web.config file in the connection string settings, or rather elements. And let's enable password retrieval. Equal to true. And let's also enable password reset. True for that one. And let's require a question and answer. True, and that looks good. So this provider here in the web.config file, rather the membership provider that we've defined here, will cause our website to use the custom provider rather than the any other provider, such as the SQL membership provider that comes with ASP.NET. And before we leave the web.config file here, I just want to point out up here on line 55 is the machine key element with the key values that are used for encrypting or hashing of the password, as we saw when we were looking at the custom membership provider code. So let's close this down here, and now what I'd like to do is create a few pages, and on our default page, what we'll do is we'll just say this is the how, put a little label, so to speak, how do I, and this is the custom membership provider. And this is just a simple little label so that when this page comes up, we know what it is. Then there's two other pages that I'd like to create to test out our provider. And the first one is going to be a page called Create User, which will do as the name implies. And then the other is a login page. And we'll just name that one Login. So let's put a login control here on our login page. We'll go over to the toolbox. Down under Login, we'll get a login control. Drag it over here onto our login page and put that in there. And let's go over to our Create User page and take one of the standard Create User Wizard controls. and put that here as well. And now we should be all set to test out our little website that'll use our custom membership provider. Before we test out the website, what I want to do is open up our custom membership provider class and set a few breakpoints. And the first one I want to set is up in the create user method. And then the second one will be down in the validate user method. So now we're all set to go. Let's just make the create user page our startup page. We'll start up the website in a debug mode. We'll get this standard create a user form from the create user wizard control. Let's fill this out. We'll call this test user 1. Password we'll make password. Email we'll make test user 1 at temp.org. Security question, let's use favorite dog, and that would be Dino. Now when I click create user, you'll see we jump into the create user method, and it goes through all the logic that we just saw when we reviewed that class. Let that go. We end up in validate user, and here it would go through all the logic to determine whether or not the current user is valid that we saw. And when we finish up with that, you'll see we successfully create a new user. And we'll click continue, and since we're now authenticated and logged in, we have access to our home page. So now let's go back, and this time we'll make the default ASPX be the home page. And I should note that all of the access for anonymous users has been turned off here, so whenever we try to access any page, including the home page, we'll be asked to authenticate. So now let's start it up again, and this time we're redirected to the login page. Let's log in as test user and put in the password. Click login, we end up in validate user again. It goes through that logic, and when it's complete, it authenticates us and we're redirected to the home page. Let's just shut down the browser here, and I want to go back over to SQL Server and just take a quick look at the database table users where we're storing our information. And you will see here we do have one row for test user 1, so the information that we entered in our create user form was stored in the database. So that's an example of two of the major operations in our custom membership provider, creating a user and validating a user. As you saw when we went through the code, there's a lot of properties and methods here from the abstract base class that are implemented. And what I encourage you to do is download the sample source code, install it on your machine, and use breakpoints as a means of stepping into various operations, such as entering too many invalid passwords. So in summary, what we did is we created a custom membership provider by creating a class library, and in it we had a class called HCI Membership Provider that it inherited from the abstract base class of Membership Provider from the .NET framework. And then we implemented a number of abstract properties and methods from that base class. I hope you enjoyed this video on how to create a custom membership provider. This is Chris Pels. Thank you for your time.